Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first expansions lecture. The subject tonight, from Mozart to the bagpipe with a small computer. The lecturer, T.H. O'Byrne, from the computing department at Glasgow University. Mr. O'Byrne.
The music of which you have heard some and will hear more comes from what was the first computer to be wholly designed and built in Scotland. This was a computer which was a joint effort between the Glasgow firm of Bowen Stroud and Glasgow University. Glasgow University provided some of the money for the components. Bowen Stroud collaborated in the design, and at the end, the fully engineered computer was presented to the university. It was a computer built about the time when transistorized computers first became a possibility, and it was designed with many instructional features as an instructional computer, as you will see, because there will be many displays of the control panels of the computer presented here on the control screen of the Telecine, which will be used in the course of this lecture. The computer was designed and built between the years of 1959 and 1964. So it is not surprising that by present-day standards, it is a somewhat slow and small computer. It is, in fact, about 100 times as small and 100 times as slow as many computers which nowadays you will meet in universities and in business firms. It is now, to some extent, in the position of a vintage car, and there is a problem of finding useful things which something of that age can do. It has been possible with this computer to do some musical projects which, not of first-rate importance, are nevertheless of some subsidiary interest in various musical projects which the computer can help. With a small computer, you can do things which, with a large computer, you cannot do when other people are breathing down your neck saying, "Do you know what this costs? I have other more important things to do." So to this extent, I think I have been fortunate in having these facilities. I would welcome several members of the audience tonight who either have been or still are contributing in many ways to the success of the project of keeping this computer going and producing music of the type which I will let you hear more of before this evening is done. Now, how does the computer in fact produce music? Well, to do the job for which it is usually designed, a computer operates by going through its program in the form of loops, sequences of instructions which are obeyed in succession, possibly with small changes. And if these loops are of small length, then in that case, the control signals in the computer, which are tapped off and led to an amplifier and a speaker to make the sound, occur at rapid frequency and produce high notes. If you have a short length of loop, then you will get a high note. If you have a long length of loop, you will get a low note. The number of times you traverse the loop can be used to control the duration of the note. With a small computer like this, there is no question of simulating the more complicated musical forms, such as can be achieved with other instruments, such as perhaps the Moog synthesizer. Here you have simply a sound which is produced by an electrical pulse which is on and then may be separated by a variable interval from a repetition of the same pulse. If these pulses come along regularly, then they are the electronic equivalent of the puffs of a siren which can produce a musical note. And since there is no attack, there is no dying off of the sound as in a piano or in a guitar, the natural interpretation of the mind is that the computer sounds like a wind instrument, an instrument which starts at full volume, continues with unvarying volume, and then suddenly cuts off. So it is not so surprising that the sounds that you will hear tonight suggest wind instruments such as horns, clarinets, and bagpipes, I hope, because of this feature of the computer. Now, with the computer, it is interesting not merely to generate these notes, but to undertake various other projects where the data handling facilities of the computer can be of some use. Now, as an example of what can be done with the computer, where the computer facilities are used, I will ask them to run the first Telecine recording. You will hear some music and see it being changed in pitch and speed independently by console control. Now there, that is the start. Now then you will see the controls being operated to raise that in pitch by 5 semitones, aggravating it by 1/4. That is the noise which the computer makes adjusting the score. And a similar console operation can be used to change the speed. You see, the orders which come along regularly and produce the musical notes in the speed change and transposition program are becoming at irregular intervals, and they simply produce a noise. All this noise and music is done simply by connecting an amplifier and a speaker to the appropriate circuit of the computer and having the appropriate type of program running. In effect, you are sort of putting a stethoscope on the electronic harp of the computer. Now, having got these facilities whereby you produce a pulse which has a variable spacing, as compared with some musical instruments, there is a distinction of timbre as you pass from the high notes to the low notes. Since the mark length is fixed and the spacing varies, at the high range you have more or less a square wave, whereas at the low range you have more or less a spike. In that case, the timbre changes more from something rather like a horn at the top to something rather more like a bassoon or an oboe at the bottom. Now, this can be exploited to produce something of the nature of a fake duet. Now, I will be playing you this from the tape recording. I should say perhaps at this point that computers with music programs are no very rare thing. It's a poor computer which hasn't got a musical program which can play a hornpipe when an admiral of the fleet comes to open the new wing of the computer building. But it is rather another matter to get the full advantages out of your computer and build into it all the facilities which it is capable of giving. This means, in effect, paying attention to the fact that you should do, like any other musician, the most you can to put as much expression as possible into your pieces with the facilities which you have available. In the case of an instrument like the computer, where you cannot vary the volume, this means, in fact, that you must do similarly to what an organist does who has no swell on his instrument. He can emphasize one note a little more than another in the musical structure by dwelling on it for slightly longer as he plays it. And this is an essential feature of various programs if, in fact, you are to produce something which you can offer to a musician as something that you can reasonably ask him to hear. Now, if you do that, and if you take advantage of this timbre effect from top to bottom, as I suggested, then there is an effect of persistence of hearing, rather similar to persistence of vision, which can be aided by reverberation, and something which, in fact, is only playing solo notes, can give some simulation of a duet if they occur somewhat as in this piece. Piece, in fact, I have started you on the beginning of the conducted tour, which I have promised, because that is, in fact, a piece by Mozart. It is one of his variations on a French folk song, which is rather similar to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, the piece which, in view of its firework nature, I tend to call Pyro Twinkle. Now, as another example, I can give you the beginning to what, in fact, is the party piece of the Soledad computer. I'm sorry that time does not permit you to hear the whole of this piece. It is, in fact, Handel's arrival of the Queen of Sheba from the Opera of Solomon, and the computer at one loading, although it only has 1024 words of 20 bits at its disposal, and this piece has something upwards of 1500 notes, can, in fact, at one go, play the piece exactly as you are about to hear it here. At this point, I do emphasize that those notes in the score, which are written as semiquavers, are available in the computer and are used in three slightly different durations to give you the benefit of rallentando and rubato to have some expression in the piece. I'm sorry I have to stop there and not give you the benefit of the trill, which finally occurs somewhat similar to the ones which you've heard in the trumpet voluntary. These, of course, in the case of the computer, have got to be programmed as individual notes, and one has to learn by experience just how long a trill is, just as one has also to learn how long a rubato and a rallentando is measured in actual numbers. Because I emphasize once again that in this computer, everything has to be put on tape and fed in once and for all, and then the computer does everything else. This is not like a keyboard instrument in any sense with someone operating and controlling the timing. The timing must be put once and for all on the tape, and then it goes in. Now, about this stage when we were producing the fake harmony, which you have just heard in the Mozart, people tended to say, of course, the computer can only play one voice at a time. But this tended to act as a challenge. If one hears this is impossible, one says, is it really? And what we did was we produced harmony on the computer by a technique which post office engineers would call multiplexing. If, in fact, you have positions, say, in a cycle of 12 pulses and can arrange that three of these pulses are separated by an interval of 4 units and two of the others interspersed among them are separated by an interval of 6 units, while the positions of the other pulses do not cause any pulse or sound at all, then in the one plane you have at the one time the components of two notes which are separated by the interval of a fifth, and you can then play the chord of a fifth. You do have the advantage that from the nature of the computer these must be absolutely two. If you have an octave, then in the computer this is done by counting two against one, and there is no possibility that it can even be fractionally out. If it's there at all, it must be a true octave. This is part of the fascination of this type of work. Now, when this is done, what you are about to see is the computer panel which is operating when the computer is stored as a jukebox with 6 Christmas carols which can be selected by an appropriate choice of the hand switches. If you will now please run the telecine, you will see me testing the computer for the presence of two of these, and then finally we will play one. That successfully proves that Adesti was there if you set the right number. Similarly for Hark the Hills. Then setting all the switches, I stop it, and I now say, let's play Adesti and watch the display. Now you see in the main row of lights that on the left it specifies the pitch, in the middle the harmony, and on the right the duration. Now may I have the next telecine clip, please? You will see and hear Adesti Fidelis being played. Notes in the display of lights immediately above the switch. Now, the harmony facilities which were available there will become of interest later, because ultimately we found that another possibility that they could be used for was to provide an efficient set of drones for the bagpipe to which our progress is ultimately leading. But at this point, the computer was used for another exercise where its data processing facilities were of some interest. At the end of the 18th century, There was a diversion for musical amateurs which consisted of the publication of a somewhat curious-looking musical score with numbered bars. Along with this were given instructions to throw a pair of dice, and with a pair of dice you can get 11 different numbers ranging from 2 to 12. By reference to a table provided with the score, you could then select from a bank of 11 choices for a first bar, 11 choices for a second bar, and so on up to 16 choices. And these were arranged in such a way that no matter which choice you made for one bar and the next, there was a suitable musical progression from one to the other. I think this had been done on other computers before I did it with this one, but it was of interest to do it here. One had to do it solo voice. One had to provide, or at least one did provide, the whole score once and for all in the computer and give it facilities, in effect, for calculating random numbers equivalent to throwing the dice, and then one could start it off. Now, the next shot on the telecine, I understand, is a superposition shot. You will be able to see the computer going through its orders, and if you start running the shot, if you look in the top right-hand corner, you will see a count taking place in binary numbers as the bars are counted twice over from 7 down to nothing. Now, what is happening there is that in the small rest halfway through the piece and in the similar rest at the end of the piece, the computer, in effect, is throwing the dice 8 times and setting up the score which it is next going to play. What was usually done at the computer was a visitor was invited to set the hand switches in any random fashion, and this controlled the point of a cycle at which one entered the piece. The computer could, in fact, play for something like 3 months without repeating itself. This was a small selection of the possibilities of the score, which I believe would go on for something like 15 million years without repetition. But nevertheless, it was a sufficiently representative sample that people could hear something from it. So you were told, set the switches and push the button, you'll probably hear some Mozart that nobody has ever heard before. It is, in fact, probable that these are authentically by Mozart. There is no manuscript for them, but they were published within a year or so of his death, and there are manuscripts which show that he did do this type of work. Now, as a sample of what happens if the dice come out another way, I will ask if the next teleclip can be run, and in this case, if you look at the top display, you'll see the dice throws. 2 is on the right, 12 is on the left, and you'll see that as each bar comes, there is a dice throw for the bar. That's like a 3 twice. 2. That is a score which is in current circulation. It would be much more convenient if it was rearranged in a matrix form so that someone could look at it and just play down it. One can do this by photocopying the score. I have done this. It's rather fun to play around with it. Now, having done some dice music like that, I sought around to see what else there might be found. And I found that there were some listed as by Haydn, held in the British Museum. I got photocopies of that, and I put this on the computer. It was interesting to find on the title page how to compose as many minuets and trios as you wish, knowing nothing about music, but only having to throw a pair of dice. This was in Italian. And the interesting thing was that although it talked about minuets and trios, it gave no trios, but only minuets. As I continued with the hunt for more dice music, I turned up some minuets and trios from a library in Vienna, and I found that the minuets were exactly those which had been published in Naples in the name of Haydn, and here were the trios as well. This enabled me to write and get accepted a small article for the Musical Times in which I claimed the discovery of 900,000 million new Haydn trios. This was, in fact, the permutation possibilities, as there were 6 choices for each of 16 bars with a few repetitions. Unfortunately, the same library, which was also searching for more, was unable for some 3 years to discover another piece for which I was searching, and when they finally produced this, this was a recipe for how to compose minuets and trios by an associate of Mozart's and Haydn's, the Abbe Maximilian Stadler, published 10 years before. So it now becomes apparent that some wily Neapolitan publisher had thought he would sell this better in the name of Haydn. I am very happy to attribute it to Maximilian Stadler sometime before his bicentenary. So now I am able to ask them to run another Telecine clip where you will see two of these Haydn, of alleged Haydn minuets played one after the other continuously from the computer. What I'm doing on the console there is I'm simply varying the display so that you could see the thing changing from a display of the bar sequence to a display of the random numbers thrown by the dice. And I was also exercising the controls which secure whether you do or do not stop at the end of a piece. Because one of the useful facilities provided was that if you heard a particular variant which was particularly attractive, you could move the hand switches and secure a stop, and you could then have the set of lights saying if you make the hand switches agree with the light, you'll hear that one over again, the one which you liked. Now, all this work, like any other computer work, was not done without the commission of various errors. Computer programs are very rarely correct at first trial, almost never. But in computer music, one sometimes has the consolation that the effect of one's errors is worth preserving. Now, here is a piece. There possibly are some people who might say they had attempted to compose this on purpose. I frankly admit that this resulted as an error, and I thought it was worth perpetuating. Here is what, in fact, is a 16th of the main work. I call this fanfare. That was, in fact, the result of an error in a program. This is your first introduction to the bagpipe on the way from Mozart to the bagpipe. That computer, so help me, was, in fact, trying to play the bagpipe. Now, I will show you later that it can succeed somewhat better than that when, in fact, the program is correct and not erroneous. On the other hand, with the computer facilities, it was possible to explore some of the numerical features of music, which is difficult to do any other way. Typically here, one thinks of the harmonics which ordinarily are considered discordant in Western music. If you get an open tube and blow it progressively harder, you get harmonics with frequencies 4, 5, 6. And ordinarily in Western music, one avoids the 7th, the 11th, and 13th harmonics and considers these as intervals which are discordant both melodically and harmonically. On the other hand, instruments like the alp horn naturally produce these. With the computer, it was interesting to try and hear how these sounded. I'm happy to say in the audience there is a young gentleman now studying with us in the department who helped me to do this work at a time when the reader was out of action and the computer had to be instructed in the laborious fashion from the hand switches alone. But from this, we secured this piece, which is in fact one of a collection of Romanian music collected by Bartok. In this you will hear firstly phrases which use the traditional melodic intervals of Western music, and then a second phrase which uses the 7th, 11th, and 13th harmonics, ordinarily considered unmusical. This is what you get. Now, of course, we have other instruments with unusual tuning rather nearer home than the Romanian alp horn, and these are, in fact, the bagpipe mentioned in the lecture. The tuning of the bagpipe, for a good and sufficient reason, differs from the traditional tuning either of medieval music or of a modern keyboard instrument. Fundamentally, it is limited to the fact that humans have 10 fingers and the bagpipe is not overblown. It consequently is limited to 9 notes, and of these, it's possible to find only 2 scales in which the tonic and the octave are both available. If you wish to tune these so that the melodic intervals are provided for these scales as well as possible, you would tune the bagpipe exactly as it has been tuned by centuries of development. So after my experience with doing computer work on the bagpipe, ably assisted by Mr. McNeil, who is both a physicist and principal of a college of piping, I had the benefit of his advice when I was adjusting grace notes. I am quite prepared to believe what they said about it taking 7 years to train a piper, because I found that as the grace notes went past, he could detect an error and tell me that it was not a tone but a tone and a half. And I was particularly gratified that after adjusting the grace notes to his satisfaction for the second time, he began to refer to the computer as he instead of as it. So with his help, some bagpipe pieces were produced, and they start off on the computer lower in pitch by 1 octave and with the grace notes played slower than they will be finally. This is because of the limitations of the small computer. So if they will run the next Telecine clip, please, you will see this taking place, and in the right-hand top corner, you will see the notes being counted as the piece progresses. What you're hearing there is something of a compromise. It's being played with the right timing of the notes, but with the wrong timing of the grace notes. For the actual recording, it was played twice as slowly as that, with the grace notes keeping the speed they were. Later on, you will see how that can be jacked up by tape recording to chanter pitch, and the drones can be added. But at this point, I want to interpose and let you hear some other music composed in the style of the bagpipe. This arose because there were inquiries when this was going on, could the computer compose music as well as play it? Now, the appropriate answer to these people at that time was that now there are much bigger and better computers. If you wish to compose music, find out the rules, go to a bigger computer, put these and play them. But the inquiries were so persistent that it was worthwhile trying to find what could be done with Solidac, composing and playing as it went. I emphasize, you can compose music much better on bigger computers. The advantage with Solidac is that you can hear music and adjust it to your satisfaction, monitoring and changing it. So, in the attempt to do this, the DICE programs were already available. and consequently it was possible to replace the bars as written by Mozart or the alleged Haydn by other choices of my own, and to superimpose additional features for changing speed, for modulating and changing rhythm, and then have the computer trying to do extemporizations in the form of the bagpipe scale. Now, in this case, of the 1,000 stores of the computer, roughly half were taken with the main program, which controlled the rest. The other half contained stored information of my choice and prescription, which set the genre piece which the computer was to compose. Now, I propose to let you hear what happened. I can only give you a sample of three successive phrases in a progression from each of the cases of composing in the style of a Strathspey, in the style of a waltz, and in the style of a march. I gave the computer a reasonable prescription, and I said that leaves you a great deal of latitude, similarly to the Mozart dice music. Use your random number facilities and fill in what I've left, and let me hear what it sounds like. So the music you're about to hear now had never been heard before it came out of the computer. There was no question of a score. For some of these pieces, actually, the computer was asked to write a score after they had been played. But they first of all came out sounding rather like this. I play the three without interruption. Strathspey, then waltz, then march. You would get some indication of the facilities for varying rhythm, for modulating within the limits of the scales available on the bagpipe, and for progressive changes through the pieces. Now, by doing a little use of tape recording, recording at one speed and playing at double speed, it's possible to take the original Green Hills that you've heard and have it sounding rather more like a bagpipe chanter. At this point, I find it necessary to remind people that I am playing the traditional version of the Green Hills, and the note which you hear, which you may think is flat compared with the Scottish Soldier, is in fact that way in the original, and that is how it should be played on the bagpipe. Here we are. And if, in fact, one takes advantage of the harmony feature of the computer programs and produces a recording of a drone, which is easy to mix with that, then one produces a somewhat more realistic simulation of the bagpipe, and one has a final result for the Green Hills sounding like this. Thank you. Well, that in fact brings me to the end of the lecture and the conducted tour which I propose to take you to show how a small computer had been the link in a chain which started at Mozart and ended with the bagpipe. Now, I will be very happy in this type of meeting if now there are any questions which people may wish to ask, and I shall try to deal with these as well as I may.
Mr. O'Byrne, what type of intonation or pitch do you use in your computer? Is it like the piano, tempered pitch,
or do you use... No, tempered pitch is very hard to realise on the computer, and one can only get an approximation to it. It is very much easier with the computer to produce a just intonation tuning, where your fifths are tuned 3 against 2 and your fourths 4 against 3 and similarly like that. I have tried various interesting experiments on audiences asking which they prefer, and this is an interesting field of work with this.
Mr. O'Byrne, what I'm interested in is what the computer can do that the human being couldn't do very easily. Have any of your inquiries led you to believe there's a possibility of inventing quite remarkable musical instruments that we haven't yet thought of, or our ordinary 10 fingers and strings haven't really measured up to? And correspondingly, is there a similar point in composing? Do you think there are harmonic structures that composers have just found too complicated, or being too traditional they haven't explored? Do you see yourself as extending the range of the human mind and its musical abilities?
Well, I think the answers to these three questions are yes and yes and no. As far as the first one is concerned, I do think, in fact, that music has been limited, as I suggested with the bagpipe, to the limitations of the human frame and the 10 fingers. This has meant that in the past, one has had to choose between having one perfect scale, properly acoustically tuned, and have no freedom to modulate any distance without landing in keys with wolf notes. Or alternatively, one had to compromise the tuning and have the advantages of a keyboard instrument with the full modulation. I think it is possible that computer-based instruments might enable man in that respect to eat his cake and have it. In other words, to do something like playing Bach's Chromatic Fantasia in just intonation in all the keys that it might move into by slight retuning of the notes as one proceeds. I am given to understand that an instrument which does that automatically, judging from the context, has been designed in Norway. As to whether I will contribute in any significant way to this myself, that is the one to which I thought the answer is no. But the second one to which I thought the answer was yes is that I think there are melodics and harmonic structures involving, shall we say, at least the seventh harmonic, which can be explored more fully, and I believe also that there are people working on that sort of thing at the moment. That's why I answered you yes, yes, and no.
Supplementary question. We can obviously tell one composer from another. Can you tell one computer from another?
No, I should think that if one would not be able to tell one computer from another, one would be able to tell one programmer from another, perhaps.
Mr. O'Byrne, have you conducted experiments on exact timing of musical intervals? For example, when you play a waltz in 3 time, the notes will not generally be accurately spaced 3 places apart. You will probably get the most interesting rhythm by making them very slightly unequal.
That is true. I've done that, I should think, not so much from the point of view of getting the dance rhythm, but as to securing whether I get the properly sounding waltz. For instance, when I was doing the Mozart Dice waltzes, I was arranging there that each of the 3 ostensibly equal crotchets in the bar were available in 3 slightly different durations, I think in the ratio of 14 to 13 to 12. And were played with a sort of longer first note and an intermediate one and then a shorter one. Similarly, the contredanses used a 14 for the first one, a 13 for the middle one, and a 12 for the others. And it was a similar technique which was used for giving the accentuations and the rallentandos in the part of the Queen of Sheba which you heard. I think this is very important if, with a small and limited computer, where you can't vary the volume and so forth, you're to get any expression worth listening to. You must use these fine distinctions of duration and find out just what is enough and what is too much. One of the things one had to do early in this computer work was to see how much of a break could not be perceived, because as you change from one note to another, the computer has to do some calculations to find out what the next note is. And while it does that, you must necessarily make it silent if it's not to make noises which you don't wish to hear. You can stand quite a long interval of silence and you have the same persistence of hearing as occurred to give the impression of the duet in the Mozart Pyro Twinkle with which I began.
Mr. O'Byrne, have you had any approaches from arrangers or composers to use the Solodac as an instrument in a symphony orchestra?
Well, I have had one from a composer, I may say, of European stature. He has won a prize, who is interested possibly in making some use of this for the 31-tone music. This would possibly be blended in, the same as other composers have used electronic music. I would be very happy if anything came of that sort of thing. It is quite possible. The essential feature is that it is a precision instrument. You can tune it any way you like, with a precision which is not available with some other musical instruments. Those who wish to exploit that can try and will be welcome.
Throughout you refer to Solodac as a small computer, yes. Although you did mention to begin with it was both small and slow.
Yes.
Since you can get small, fast machines, would you like to comment on which you think is the most difficult feature in your work on Solodac in getting the music out that you have? Was it the speed of the machine or its size?
I'm very happy with Solodac as a musical computer. I find that its speed and size is just about right for the sort of musical projects which I have the knowledge and competence to do. The problem is more, I think, one of timing. To play music on a computer, you must know precisely how much time it takes for every operation. It's not enough to know, as many modern computer specifications would say, that multiplication can be done between 3 and 5 possibly milliseconds in the old days, microseconds nowadays. You must know when it's 3 and when it's 5 if you're going to play music. This is not always so easy to find out. With the faster computers, there is the necessity of avoiding signals which are too spiky, with too short signals and too long pauses between signals. This is the criticism I would make of some four-part Bach, which I've heard played on PDP computers. I think this would be much better if these signals were used to trigger monostables and produce something rather more approximating to square waves. After all, when I want to hear my Bach, I would sooner hear it on something like a wind instrument than on something like a set of tuned African drums, which was the general effect produced by this when I once heard it.
Could we perhaps have the last question, please?
Did the College of Bagpiping send a diploma to you or to Solodac?
Oh, this is an interesting question. The one piece of this computer music which has been published, I did in fact attribute this to myself and to Solodac jointly, which I thought was the fair thing to do. As far as the official bagpipe world is concerned, I think it's possibly fair to say that the general attitude there is to encourage me privately and disapprove of me publicly. And I can quite understand this, and I make no complaints about it.
Well, on that happy note, I'm afraid I've got to draw this open session to a close. To those of you who have joined us tonight from universities, from the computing world, from the music world, our thanks. And our special thanks, Tom, to you and to Solodac for the lecture. Thank you so much.